best love is love.
Hi, Deani. Oh my God, you are never going to believe what my wife said to me the other day. I cannot
wait. Jamie, save it for the Patreon.
What? Oh, right. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Listen, everyone at home, if you want to hear what my wife said, plus a lot of other things that I have been dying to get off my chest, and there are some things, y'all, there really are, you need to come join us on our Patreon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's me and my good friend Deani here, the amazing millennial who is young and sprightly, spilling all the tea in our queer little lives and exclusive contents that you literally cannot find anywhere else, literally nowhere else in the world.
The link is in the bio. Come be part of the queer family.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Be Parent Surrogacy. Head to BeParentSurrogacy.com to learn more.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
If you are able to be out and be authentic, that is a radical democratic action.
Yeah.
And I think being able to raise authentic children and
radical.
Giving your kids space to be, it is absolutely radical. In this moment where everyone is telling you to get in a box, I think parents that are giving kids their space, that especially those parents that are fighting in Idaho, in Texas, every moment of every day that they say, tell their kids that they love them and they're great is radical.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm your host, Jamie, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families and all of our fabulous identities. And I think we need stories like this more than ever right now, am I right? We are finding ourselves in some crazy, crazy times. That's why I'm so excited to introduce this episode to you. I got to sit down with a fabulous person, Robin Merrill, law professor, former human rights campaign attorney, author, and a person who somehow manages to be both wildly brilliant and an expert on all things that are happening in this country and deeply relatable. It's really great. We talk about her journey to motherhood through IVF with her wife. We talk about raising her neuro-spicy children, as she says, and how queer families navigate identity, biology, and all the weird questions that come with it, all the things we always talk about. And then, y'all, we get into it. What's actually happening in our country right now, what we should be paying attention to, and why queer folks might just be the ones to save democracy. Hold on to that idea. Hold on to it, because we need the helpers right now. And I think the queer people might be the ones. So, before I roll the tape, I do want to say we recorded this right after they made the decision to basically legalize completely conversion therapy. So that's when we recorded this. Since then, more crazy stuff has gone, like the Mad King saying that he's going to demolish an entire civilization of people and then backtracking on it. So, like, I'm recording this intro about 3 days before the episode goes live. So who knows what has happened since then? So if we don't touch on that in this episode, it's only because we recorded ahead of time. And things are happening so rapidly at this point, as you all know. So just take that with a grain of salt. And I hope nothing crazy has happened since then. But in these times, you can never be too sure. But I hope you enjoy this episode. My biggest takeaway with this conversation is it is more important than ever now to speak up and speak out if you can, even if you feel like a squeaky wheel like I do all the time. Continue talking about these things. Continue bringing up the ludicrousy of everything that is happening in the hopes that those who are on the other side who haven't realized it yet will finally have the courage to change their minds and see reality for what it is. It's a hope. And also give folks the space to change their minds and lead with compassion, which is so hard right now. But I know y'all are out there doing the good work. I'm trying to do the good work and I'm trying to stay sane. So let's roll this tape. It's a great conversation. All right. Helen, Beulah, come here. Let's roll this tape. Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thanks. Thanks for being here. I'm excited to chat. And you're like buttoned up and together and you're like in a true like sound recording studio, which is fabulous.
You know why? I am lucky enough to teach at Willamette outside of Portland, and our art school has a studio that I'm able to use.
I'm so jealous because you see my studio is just a bedroom.
No, it's really great. I will say the last interview I did, I have a little thing that says, like, don't come in, I'm interviewing. And a group of, and it's an art school, so it was like a group of super cool, queer looking high schoolers, like, shuffled in and stood right there, and the tour guide was talking, and I had to just tell the person that I was interviewing, I was like, I really care about this. And I also want to be really welcoming. And wave at these children that are clearly super excited to see this nerdy law professor doing this thing. So, yeah. It gives the illusion that it's real. Which I
love
like.
That. No, I love that. And you're just like me. We get interrupted by my dog regularly. So
that's also why I don't do it at home, because my 11-year-old is homeschooling this year, so he's always home, and he's neurospicy.
I love that. I love that. And I've never actually heard neurospicy. I like that. I like that term.
It's a good, I feel like it's like queer. It's like a good umbrella term, because I have two of them that are so different and yet they're both very neurospicy.
Okay. I like that. Okay. Well, let's get into it, because I want everybody at home to know, like, who you are and why you're here. I feel like we're getting a good teaser of who you are, but let's just do it. Let's get into your 30-second elevator pitch. So tell us you have a book. Oh, wow. You wrote it down.
I told you I'm an over-preparer. I have a book. This is, I'm such a nerd. For my birthday last year, my wife got me, they're like remade notebooks that look like Virginia Woolf's notebooks.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Wow. We are that level.
We're that level real hard.
I can't wait. This is amazing. Okay. Are you ready? Okay. I'm get ready. Set. So ready. And go.
Hey there, I'm Robin Merrill. I am a law professor and a writer, and I host the podcast, A Queer Guide to Saving Democracy. My book is coming out this fall, just in time for the midterms, which is A Queer Guide to Saving American Democracy. I'm lucky enough to live in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Before teaching, I worked for nearly a decade in DC queer and trans policy. I was a lawyer at the Human Rights Campaign. And so I was a lawyer through marriage equality in the first 4 years of Trump. And I have two wonderful neurospicy children and a wonderful wife.
That was amazing. And wow, we're going to get into this. You know a lot. Like, you're an actual expert, whereas I just spout things that I'm not sure are true. You're an expert. We're going to get into things because these are some scary times we find ourselves. Yeah. Well, no, but a real one. These are some scary times we find ourselves in. So I'm really excited for our conversation.
It's gotten so real so fast. And I think it's one of those, I thought that it was really bad in 2017.
Yeah.
And it's worse.
So. There's like a meme going around where it's like, there's a person talking animatedly to another person, and the other person's like this, like as if 2026 is talking to 2020. Like, you can't believe this shit. You can't believe it. And we thought it was so bad.
Isn't that funny? But it's like, how is it that George W. Bush is who I want to be president right now?
Like, I would take him.
Also, I think I like him more now that I know that he's taken up painting. Did you know this?
Oh my God. I think I've heard that.
You have to Google it. Yeah. That he's taken up painting, like, in his retirement, which does make me like him more.
All of a sudden, he seems like a dream. Seriously. Like, bring him back. I will take him. I will take him and his dad. Bring him back. Bring him back. Let's go. Like, this is craziness.
It's terrible.
Before we get into all the shit show that America has become and the democracy and all the stuff, let's have like a little overview of your family building journey, because you are a queer mom.
I am.
I'd love to hear you and your wife's journey to parenthood, if I may. How long have you two been together?
We got married in 2010. So we've been together. We just celebrated our 16th earlier this month, March 9th, which was actually the first day that you could get married in DC is when we got married. So we actually got married at the courthouse.
I love that.
When you could, which was exciting. We had our first in fall of 2014. Ended up doing IVF because I feel like like everyone, fertility is crazy. Fertility is a crazy journey.
And that's why I want to dig in. So like,
yeah, so it's crazy, which I also like because we did IVF. And so we only had to do one round of egg retrieval. Both of my children are actually technically twins, which is, I'm sure, is the story for a lot of people, which is really fun because it means that my 8-year-old was frozen for 3 years, which blows his mind.
It's so fun for him.
Oh my God, he loves it. My older one, every once in a while, will just will say things like, I mean, that explains a lot, right? But yep. Don't be mean.
That tracks. Our kids are pretty much the same age. Mine is 12 and my little one is eight. And I know that scene so well. I know it. I'm catching what you're throwing. But wait, I want to backtrack. So what was the conversation surrounding family building between you and your wife? When did you start that conversation in your relationship? Was it early? I'm imagining it was because we have to figure out a lot of stuff. And then what was the conversation? Like, what was your plan for how you were going to build the family? And did it work out that way?
We had the conversation really early because my wife is older than I am. So we have an age difference and she hadn't had kids, right? And so she had had relationships before that she had not had children. And so I knew that I wanted to have kids. And so it was a very early conversation of, is this something that you have avoided and don't want to do? It was a really interesting thing because I wanted to be with her, even if she had chosen not to have children, which I think is a really sort of earth shattering to me of like, wow, yeah. I choose you. And so it was this moment of like, even if this is not what you want to do,
I still want you.
I still want you, which was amazing. Her response was exactly what you want, which is, I just had never met someone that I wanted to have children with.
Perfect.
Perfect. 10 out of 10 would recommend that answer to anyone. And I'm from Oklahoma. And so we like to get married. My wife jokes early and often, but so far, just early. So I got married at 26.
Wow, that's young.
I'm from Oklahoma. When you know, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is actually interesting because I have a lot of students who are getting married in law school. My queer students that are getting married at like 25 and 26 in law school. And it's like, well, okay.
Interesting what marriage equality can do for a group of people. Huh? Who thought?
I got married when I was 26. And my wife, again, is older. She was in her 40s when we got married, actually. And we knew we wanted to have kids. So we started fertility when I was 29. And thought that it would be quick and easy because I was 29. And it wasn't, of course, because things are never what you think they're going to be. Mm-mm. And so we ended up doing IVF. And my first was like textbook, pretty easy IVF. IVF is crazy. And I feel like we don't talk enough about how crazy the experience. Did you do IVF? Mm-hmm. I feel like we don't talk enough about like the stabbing with the needles. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean yourself?
All of it. The needles and then the thing where the big shot.
Yeah. The trigger shot.
We don't talk enough about this, like as a society, about how effing crazy it is. Aside from like the trauma of like how gross it is to have the needles and then the egg retrieval and all of that stuff. I got pregnant with my first on the first transfer and froze everybody else.
What was the donor situation? What was your reasoning behind the path you went? All those things. Those are very, very important.
Yeah, we lucked out on the decision because my wife did not have a uterus by the time we were having children. So that was easy. Also, I've always wanted to carry anyway, although pregnancy is also terrifying. And I feel like we don't talk enough about how like sci-fi.
It's crazy.
Pregnancy and delivery is. But we knew it was going to be me. Mm-hmm. We did a anonymous donor because we are both lawyers and I was in queer civil rights law. And know a lot about, basically, I know all the bad stories.
You've heard a lot of the stories. Yeah. Bad ones. Mm-hmm.
We basically tried to match the anonymous donor with my wife. It's funny because then also in addition to that, in DC at the time you had to go to like this counseling session. We had to go to the social worker and basically talk about that Nancy was going to be okay, that she was not biologically related to this embryo. And that which was crazy. Like, it was a pretty weird, and we had to effing pay for it, which sucked. Like, it was
that's annoying. I will say that having spoken with as many people as I have who make this decision and do face this non-bio connection, some of us do kind of freak out over that, and some of us don't. The therapy, the social work that they do surrounding this decision is, to your point, really is geared towards heterosexual couples who haven't dealt with the grief knowing that they are not going to be a bio, one of them will not be a bio parent. Whereas we've done that grief. Like, we don't need your help. We've done that grief. We just have to get through it sometimes. You know, like, it's a nuanced difference, and it's not set up for families like ours. I agree with you there 100%. And you have to pay for it.
Yeah, I think that was the issue, was I think that there is something to talk about.
Yes, 100%.
This strange woman that we paid $125 to clearly had like a form, basically, it was not doing much. I think she actually asked like the same question of like, how did you decide on the donor? And we're like, well, my wife is German and Welsh and Irish historically. And, you know, so that's what we did. But then she asked all of these awkward follow-up questions, like, is your German heritage important to you? And it was like, what is the right answer there? Like, for my first birthday, we made it an Oktoberfest theme because he was an October baby, to celebrate her German heritage.
Yeah.
And we had beer steins and pretzels as a joke, because like, I mean, I guess her German heritage. I never thought of her German heritage before.
Right.
It's an interesting situation, because I do love that I was able to carry my kids. And at the same time, I wish that they also had that genetic connection. She is so wonderful.
Right.
But luckily, I think that, you know, she's from Philadelphia, and I think has been able to, even without any genetic connection, somehow make my children pretty aggressive East Coast, even though we now live in Portland. And there's like no genetic connection. And like my little one was like 2, and he was like standing on the radiator looking out the window when we were in DC. He was like pounding on the window, and we're like, dude, what are you doing? And he turned around and he goes, they're parking in front of my house. And it was like, I just looked at my wife and walked away, and I was like,
that's all you, babe. That's all you.
You've done this.
They do take our traits. Like, there is something with nurture over nature, and then there's also nature. But I see it too. I see my kids. I see my wife in both of my children, even though she doesn't share a genetic tie to one of them. And they both have the smart ass quirks that my wife has. They have become that, you know, and I love it. And it's great. And it's super sweet. And I wish we could be biologically connected. And at the same time, it doesn't matter. It doesn't.
Yeah, no. And I think, and every once in a while, I will joke that whenever they are just, because they are both neurospicy, whenever they are just like a hot mess, and you know, I'm my own clearly brand of like crazy. So whenever they do something, I'll actually look at Nancy and be like, I made you that. You're welcome. I made this for you.
I did that for you. What I love about it too is like if somebody gives my daughter a compliment, like if somebody's like, oh my God, she's gorgeous, I can say, I know, because I got no skin in the game. I didn't make her. So it's not like I'm like saying anything about myself. I'm like, yeah, I know she is. She's so pretty, right? Like, it's not from me. Yeah. It's not from me. So I can say it. I can say it humbly. Like, I don't, you know. Yeah. So you can take the compliments. Cute. Yeah. It's just a thing. It's a nuanced thing between that we all share this bio/non-bio connection, because most of the time, one of us doesn't have a biological connection, and something that needs to be talked about more.
I think also my wife was raised by her grandmother primarily, because her parents had her when they were super young. And so her childhood was with what she would say is with a lot of people that weren't necessarily all biologically connected to her, but definitely she felt very parented. And I think that really, I don't know if it helped it, but I think it helped her sort of navigate it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. So you did IVF, same donor for both, because it was the same batch of IVF, and you have a lovely, happy family.
We do. Very, very funny. Just a funny, that's the only way that I can do We are a funny little family, and we're very lucky. We're very lucky.
One more question I have for you before we dive into the shit storm that is the United States right now. Well, how do you approach talking to your kids about their origin story? And when did you start talking to them about it? Like, how do y'all talk about it in your house?
It's been really organic, which I've been really grateful for. It was not something that we were not concerned about because we did do the anonymous donor. And I've been very grateful for both of my children that both of my children, they know about science. Basically, mm-hmm. That's how we described it, of like, science is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the basics of how they came to be. Even my little one that I think I anticipated him that he would be a little more like, what about the, like, is it a dad? And what is this? And so I didn't want to like color his experience with it by like my own sort of, like, I didn't want to be dominating and be like, it's not a father, because it's like biologically, this is what this is. And he was very sweet. He was like, well, I mean, clearly you need that material and you need this material. And that is clearly, basically, that is clearly the another parent. But I mean, not really, because you and mom are the parents, but this is just how we needed to do it. And it was like this very like back away situation. Like, it was like, okay, that is exactly, yes. And I'm going to not edit. I'm not going to. So I think it's been less fraught than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. They just get it.
Like, I really, and it might, you know, going forward, it might be fraught. And I would assume that they would want to do those sibling registries, right? Like, I feel like that would make sense to me if they wanted to do that. And I would definitely support them in doing that if they wanted to. But it has not been the difficult thing that I thought it would be.
It sounds to me like you've been open and honest with them from the start about where they came from. Like most of us do. And it, for me, it was with books. Like, we started with children's books that we just read at the bedtime. So they...
Oh, that would have been a good idea. That's very nice and intentional.
Hey, but you do...
But you're a professional.
I don't know about that. No, but like, you know, I think the main thing is that we're open and honest and our kids know that they can come to us and talk to us. And the truth is, they're going to notice, even if we don't talk about it, our kids are going to notice, oh, my moms don't have the parts that my friend's parents have. So there had to be some kind of intervention. So they're going to ask questions eventually. So the best thing to do is just bring it up as much as you can. And like you did, take it down to the science, like strip it away from all the stigmas that go along with baby making and just take it down to you need a uterus, you need sperm. We didn't have it, so we got it.
Because it is super cool. Like, I think that's the thing. It's like both of my kids are really like science-brained people and really like it. And so I just basically was like, it's amazing. And aren't we lucky that we live in this time that we're able to do this? And it is. It's science is crazy.
Science is crazy. Thank God for science.
Well, and it's also cute because my little one has one of his favorite sitters. And he were talking, and I think it was probably a couple days after the "Can you believe you were frozen for 3 years?" conversation. And I walked in, and she was like, "I was frozen too," and she's like 16, and she was, and it was like this super sweet interaction between the two of them. She was like, "Oh my god, I was IVF and I was frozen," and it's like that's why you guys get along.
That's fun. My daughter, my 12-year-old, has started. Because she knows. And we joke about it in our family. We're jokers. We joke about everything. And she has started doing this thing where if somebody's like being silent, like if somebody's being like one of her friends is not really talking, she'll be like, she said to her friend the other day, "You're reminding me of my dad right now." She said, why am I reminding you of your dad? Because you're being so quiet. Like, she just like makes stupid That's jokes funny. About the fact that she doesn't have a dad. No, I don't have a dad. I have a donor. You know, like, she thinks it's funny.
Yeah,
she thinks that's funny. Our kids are all right is the point. Is the takeaway. All right. So let's get into this. You're an expert on the law and policy and the shitstorm we find ourselves in. Can we get into this? And I kind of want you to take it away and tell me What are your concerns as an expert who's been watching this stuff and in policy for so long? What are your concerns and like, what can we do? What can we do to protect ourselves? What should we do? And what should we actually be worried about? And what do we not have to worry about? That was, so I said, I wanted you to take it away and I just gave you like 8 questions. So go for
okay.
it.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Let's start with what I'm concerned about.
Okay.
And I'm concerned about 1,000 things. But to break it down a little bit, obviously, I think the thing that is most in your face at the moment is who is in the White House and who is controlling the legislature. Mm-hmm. And I think what we currently have is a president who is not facing re-election, who either doesn't understand the Constitution or doesn't care, or both, perhaps, and is supported by basically 4 decades of really radical conservative politics and policymaking that is sort of blossoming in our Supreme Court right now. Like everything that is happening in the Supreme Court right now has been a plan since 1982.
The Project 2025, the makers of
Project 2025, the makers of that, the Heritage Foundation. This is really doom and gloom. So feel free to edit this. It's all so bad.
I can't stop. I'm glued. I'm plugged in 24/7. This is not normal. This is not a normal way to live for us. But every single day, we are bombarded with something terrifying and terrible. And so I can't turn away.
Just this morning, the Supreme Court issued a ruling upholding, I don't know if you saw it, the Colorado currently bans conversion therapy for LGBTQ minors. And the Supreme Court has knocked that law down, which means that in Colorado now, you can force your kid to go to conversion therapy.
Oh my God.
So what concerns me is that we are living out basically the dream agenda of the Heritage Foundation that they have been working on since 1982.
This has been a really concerted, targeted effort. They've had a plan, and they found him, the Mad King. They found him. They put him in the place.
Absolutely. And it's not just policy and politics as usual. I think what is deeply concerning is that because in the 80s and 90s, it was conservative politics. Mm-hmm. It was bigoted. If you think of, you know, the 80s and early 90s HIV response, like it was clearly a bigoted situation. What we have now is actually an anti-democratic situation. And that's what's different and is what is, I think, most concerning to me, is that all of these creepy conservative policies are being used by people that want to be authoritarians and people that don't care about democracy. And that's the problem,
right?
Is that, you know, Heritage Foundation has existed since 1980, right? None of that is new. The problem is we now have this horrible sort of collision of Trump, because Trump doesn't care about Christ. Trump doesn't care about babies. Like, what are you talking about?
Nope.
So we have this horrible collision of people that I do think are genuinely conservative for ideological reasons and care about abortion and
babies,
care about all of these things, right?
Uh-huh.
That have effectively used policy to put someone in place who's now going to undo the whole thing.
We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
All right, y'all. This feels like maybe a good time to drop in and talk about our sponsor. We're talking about IVF. We're talking about how crazy it is. And one thing I do wish more people talked about when it comes to IVF and surrogacy is how complicated and unpredictable the process can be. When my wife and I were going through IVF, we thought insurance was covering all of it, but in the middle of the cycle, we learned that we suddenly had to pay $15,000, and we had already started treatment, so stopping wasn't really an option. And so we took a loan out. Thankfully, we had that option to make it work, but not everybody does. So if you've been thinking about growing your family, especially in a moment where things can feel uncertain or overwhelming, like the times we find ourselves in, I want to remind you, you still have options and you don't have to figure it out all alone. That's why working with organizations like Be Parent Surrogacy can make such a difference. Their team helps intended parents manage the entire process from matching with a surrogate to coordinating medical care to navigating legal steps. So there's more clarity along the way, which goes a long way, y'all. So if surrogacy or IVF are part of your path, learn more or schedule a free consultation at beparentsurrogacy.com. Oh, and if you mention the Queer Family Podcast, you get $2,000 off any service you book. Go make those babies, raise those queer warriors, and then come tell me about it.
Love is love.
And I think this is also concerning. We have basically no checks anymore, because the whole thing with the Constitution is that you're supposed to check each other, right? That the Supreme Court is supposed to check the president, is supposed to push back on Congress, et cetera. And everybody is in the pocket of really, really radical folks. And they're using those radical policies to push an authoritarian agenda, which involves effing invading other countries and kidnapping other people's presidents. Like, I think that's the thing, is like, it seems like it's really disconnected. Like, conversion therapy for minors, kidnapping the president of Venezuela, those seem really different.
Right.
And they're all, it feeds into this like really horrible, I think, strategic undermining of democracy. It sucks. It's my legal opinion.
And it's their plan. And I can't help think of Handmaid's Tale. Like,
it's not that.
I know. And in the back of my mind, these scenes, there are scenes from The Handmaid's Tale that play repeatedly for me in the back of my mind that scare the shit out of me. I'm thinking of the scene at the airport where the two moms with the kid, and they're like, you don't get to go. You don't get to go. You're not the bio parent. You don't get to go. Remember that scene?
Yeah. I was going to say that my wife, her thing is when the ATM cards don't work in the book.
That one too. Ooh, very beginning in the cafe, when they're like, sorry, this doesn't work. You have to ask your husband. Yeah. And yeah, they were just out on a run. Yeah. Oh my God. That scene chilled me to the bone, and it keeps running through my head. That scene. I'm waiting for it to happen here. Like, we're living in such fear. It's not healthy.
And this goes to like how rapidly I think things have gone off the rails.
Yeah.
Because when The Handmaid's Tale, when the show came out, I remember being like, oh, this is clearly sci-fi. It's clearly crazy, right? I mean, it's a wonderful commentary, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not, this is not something we need to necessarily be afraid of. But then the House passed the SAVE Act, right? Which the SAVE Act basically—
Wait, did that pass?
It passed the House.
Oh, okay.
The House, but not the Senate.
Not the Senate,
and
okay.
The SAVE Act basically says you have to have either a passport or a driver's, or a birth certificate with the name that's on your driver's license, which the majority of married women of a certain age who changed their name just don't have.
Nope.
And not everybody has a passport, because not everybody travels internationally, right?
And not everybody can afford a passport.
Exactly. And so what it's going to, in effect, if it passed the Senate, what it would do is basically make it so that married women can't vote.
Mm-hmm. But that's been their plan. That's been their plan all along.
Right.
Because I listened to a podcast a long time ago. I can't remember what it was, that followed this evangelical preacher and his group. And one of their things that they have been working on for 20 plus years is taking away a woman's right to vote, because it negates the vote in the House if both people vote, if they don't vote the same. So the woman should step back and let the husband make the decision and do the voting.
And it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
And it's also the people advising J.D. Vance right now.
Yeah.
Period.
Advising the whole White House.
Uh-huh. It's one thing to have like Phyllis Schlafly, right? And to have conservative politics and ideology impacting your politics and all of that, right? And it's another when it is being used by an agenda that is designed to undermine our democracy and our system of government, which is currently what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think if you had asked me even 5 years ago if I would have said that statement, I would have absolutely denied it. Like, I could not believe that I would be saying it.
Right.
But it's where we are. And I think if we don't start saying it, if we don't start talking about how all of this is undermining civic engagement and democratic engagement and our ability to impact our democratic future, we're just screwed. And I think it's one of those, like, it might be too late already, but we should at least try. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we also don't want this to be happening as a whole and as a people. And I think that's what's also really disconcerting, is that the people in power just don't care.
They don't.
That they are doing something directly opposing what vast majorities of the United States wants. And they don't care about the Constitution, which drives me crazy.
Everything that this country is founded on. And it's funny, because when I read The Handmaid's Tale in college, it was such a dystopian, like, I imagined that it was on another planet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even, and then now it's like, oh my God, everything is coming true in that novel. And like, I mean, I know we're not there yet. We're not there. And hopefully we don't get there.
All of the things that are in The Handmaid's Tale that are so deeply disturbing are the lack of autonomy, the lack of control over your destiny and your body, and the ability to make decisions about your life. And yeah, we're not putting people in those creepy robes and making them have babies because of environmental degradation, but we have allowed states to ban almost all forms of abortion. We are requiring and criminalizing people to have children that they can't carry or don't want to carry. You know, I think in a lot of ways we're moving there. And the Trump administration is, like, blatantly the pronatalism. I don't know if you followed this at all, but they, like, really are pushing a certain type of people to reproduce and have babies.
Yeah.
In a way that's pretty gross and also pretty consistent with Mussolini and Hitler, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not to draw too sort of fine a point, but a lot of the language that we see out of the Trump administration sounds a lot like Mussolini as far as trying to get people to have babies for the country. And it's like,
gross.
Oh my God, not. It's like, just gross. It just turns by. It's like, meh.
There's some woman who's a very big conservative voice. I don't know her name, but she was just speaking at something big. Then there's a video going around where she said, you know, I encourage, we have to start encouraging our young girls to have the courage to get married young and to start having babies, lots of them, even if they can't afford them. And that's it, to your point, like, this rhetoric, they're really ramping it up. Yet they took away all the funding for those welfare moms, those mothers of color who.
Well, that's
who,
what I was going to say. Like,
the problematic
core is also just
ones.
Racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And you're telling all the white women to go have all the babies and not be able to afford them. But you took away all the social services to help people do that. But you'll give it back if the white people do it.
Exactly.
It's crazy. And we're living through some crazy times. This is not normal. This is not healthy. So what can we do? What do we do? You said speak up. Like, we need to say it more. We need to say it louder. We need to have these conversations. And what else can we do? What can we do for our well-being? Like, how are we going to get through this?
I was talking to a friend maybe a month ago now. And I said, like, well, maybe it's going to be okay. And she goes, you know what? Maybe it's not, but we're still going to be here.
Right.
And it was this powerful moment of, like, okay, like, we are still going to persist. And I think it's a couple of things. I think it is absolutely talking about it, being sort of open to saying things out loud that seem really far-fetched. Because I think that's the other thing, is that nobody wants to be the crazy person standing on the fire escape yelling, this is fascism.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I can actually say, I know a lot about fascism. And this is a lot like that.
Yeah.
And so I think holding people accountable that are in office and saying, this is the impact of what you're doing, empowering people to speak up and protest. I think the No Kings protest is really beautiful and amazing. And I think pro-democracy protests like No Kings give people a space that wouldn't necessarily be political, like big P political, gives them space to actually go out and say, this is what I care about, and I'm not for this. And I think that's a really important piece, because I think that what the right is banking on is this idea that, well, this is just politics as usual. This is just basically how the game is played, et cetera. And I think really ringing the alarm bell that this is not politics as usual. This is not normal. And that your voice absolutely matters. Giving space to have conversations and let people come to the table and change, right? Mm-hmm. Last week, got to speak to the person who runs Brandi Carlile's Looking Out Foundation about all of the work that they have done in Minnesota. And one of the things that Brandi Carlile said on stage in Minnesota was basically, Trump voters, you've been scammed. And it's okay to admit that. And it's okay to come to the table. And I think that giving space for people to change and not counting people out is really important. And I think, you know, of my own parents, both of them are pretty conservative. Both of them, I think, voted for Trump twice. My dad actually sent me this little text that he sent his congressman, who, because he got like, he gets those like Republican texts about like, look at this bill that I just did. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back in the little text, I like this credit card bill. You need to dismantle the ICE agency. They are doing the wrong thing.
Okay.
And it's like so powerful, I think, when people stand up. My poor dad probably, hopefully, I mean, he doesn't listen to any of this, hopefully, but he's wonderful. But he is definitely not a political person. And he is starting to feel like this can't be in his name.
Right.
And I think giving people space and educating people about what's at stake and what is happening, and also telling people what they can do. Like, you can absolutely join your protest. You can text your member of Congress. You can write to your member of Congress. You can also start working in your own community. I think one of the things that's most beautiful that came out of Minneapolis is how much the community came together to get food, for example, to people that couldn't leave their house. Because mm-hmm. I think so much of sort of being in this sort of moment of democratic fracture is, well, how are we going to stay sane and safe? And we've got to sort of lean into our mutual aid networks and start really caring for each other. And it's also things that seem small, I think, really allow you to maintain your humanity. And I think that is a big piece of this, is what the other side is trying to do is make us as not human as possible. Mm-hmm. Trying to retain our own humanity through exercising compassion to ourselves and to other people is huge. And I think, you know, if you are able to be out and be authentic, that is a radical democratic action.
Yeah.
And I think being able to raise authentic children and radical. Giving your kids space to be, it is absolutely radical. In this moment where everyone is telling you to get in a box, I think parents that are giving kids their space, that especially those parents that are fighting in Idaho, in Texas, every moment of every day that they say, tell their kids that they love them and they're great, is radical.
I hear that. And what they want us to do, and the compassion piece is something that actually has been really coming up for me a lot lately. But my last, one of my most recent interviews, same thing. He was explaining, like, you know, how he was judging the other side, and then he finally came to a realization that we're all humans together, and they have the capacity to have compassion as well. And but what they want is for us to stay pitted against each other, and so that's where we lose our power, when we give into this two sides fight, and it's really, really hard to exercise compassion when we're hearing all this other stuff, right? And so I think my work right now is to try, in any instance that I can, to try to exercise compassion and to see the other side and to see maybe where I can communicate together, where we can come together. And it's so hard. It is so hard.
It is so hard, especially when, you know, basically what we're saying is you need to have compassion for people that don't have compassion for you.
Yeah.
You have to come to the table for people that say that you shouldn't have children.
Right.
Not everybody can do that. And not everybody should do that.
No.
It's just the people that have the privilege and have the bandwidth should do it.
Yes.
Like, I think that's a big thing, is that, like, it is a lot to ask. And it is also what we need to do. you know, I think it's also a moment of really hard conversations with our kids, right? Because I took my little one to, my big one does not like crowds because he's very neurospicy, but my little one who's neurospicy does like crowds and loves Godzilla. And so it was an opportunity, because I live in Portland, for him to wear his Godzilla outfit to the No Kings protest. And so he wore his Godzilla outfit to the No Kings protest and carried his little sign. And it was this great moment of him being able to see what engagement looks like and what politics look like. And it's Portland. And so the Portland police actually were there giving out stickers and actually got down on the ground, you know, got down on his level and said, thank you for being here. Like, oh, this wow. is what we need you to do. And it was really lovely. And then we were driving to school and NPR, I was talking about Renee Good. Mm-hmm. And from the back seat, he's like, people get shot protesting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they shouldn't. And, you know, as a, and then you click into this parent mode of like, as your parent, I'm going to keep you safe and I'm going to keep you as safe as I can. And like, but also these are real conversations. And I think, what is that balance between this terror that we live in? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started teaching my, I get to teach all of these first year students, Con Law One. And my first class was like the weekend after Renee Good was murdered. And it was this moment of like, how am I going to get up in front of all of these like bright-eyed 23, 24-year-olds and say like America is wonderful?
Right.
It's because I believe that it is and we're just doing it wrong. And I think that is the thing, is to keep believing that we are doing the right thing and we just need to hold the people accountable that are doing it the wrong way. ICE right. should not be in airports. ICE should not be in hospitals. ICE should not be in schools.
Yeah.
Period. Right. I mean, there are certain markers of things like fascism and authoritarianism that we should be able to say, this is not the United States.
Yeah. And right now it's all blurred lines. I'm thinking of like, we have to be the, like, if you remember the Care Bears?
I do.
The Care Bear stare, where they stand in a line together.
Oh, like this, right?
Yes. And then their bellies protrude the love
come out.
Yeah. And they put their superpowers of love out into the world and they soften the bad guys.
Wow, that is really unlocked like a 1986 memory for me. Whoa.
Okay. I'm here for you. Gen X right here. That's what we have to be. We have to be the Care Bears with the Care Bear stare right now. And that's what's going to combat the evil that is overtaking our country. That's what I'm getting. So Care Bear, be a Care Bear in a world of villains.
I know. Well, and I think that's the thing. It's like, be a Care Bear, understand that, and invite other people to join you. And I think that we have a lot more in common than we don't. People are supporting and joining this right-wing movement because, to be completely honest, they're also suffering, mm-hmm. right? They also can't pay for healthcare. They also don't have childcare. They also have lost their jobs. They also are paying something insane, like $6 at the pump. And the people that they think are cool that are on Fox News are giving them a really easy group of people mm-hmm. that they can blame. Clearly, it is not Trump. It is that trans seventh grade lacrosse player
yep.
is the reason you're paying $6 at the pump. That's yeah. a lot easier than saying our entire system of government is sort of out of kilter. And yet, I think that is the problem. And so I think, you know, it's one of the reasons why mutual aid and responding to suffering is so important and so democratic, because you have to go toward that suffering and sort of figure out where you can actually connect with people and move from there.
Also, remember that, you know, those who can be the Care Bears, those who can be the helpers. You got to step up more so right now, because there are those who cannot.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. It's so bleak. I talk about fascism all the time. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. But this is what's on all of our minds. If it's not on your mind, you're not paying attention.
That's the thing. Like, if you are not heated right now, I don't know who you are, and you're clearly not my people.
Exactly. It's bleak. And these conversations need to be had. And if you're not having these conversations, if you're not fired up, put some fire under your ass and start paying attention. That's how I feel.
Mainstream politics has done a really good job of telling people that politics and understanding government and all of this stuff is super complex.
Right.
And you couldn't possibly understand like the history of like Iran and all of it. And it's like, you know what? I just want people to know that you are absolutely smart enough to understand this.
Yeah.
You do not have to have any sort of like degree to understand any of this. The other side really capitalizes on people either not even, I think, being apathetic, but I think being bullied into thinking that politics either don't matter or they're not smart enough to do them, or they're right. They have other things to worry about. And I think it's just really important that people know that they can totally care about things and learn about things
and grasp it.
Go volunteer at your library.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And raise good kids. I mean, I think that's a big thing.
Raise good kids, which the queer community is really good at. I'll tell you that much.
And it's because we know how to raise good kids. And I think we know how to raise kids that are fighters, and we know how to raise kids that stand up for what's right.
Yeah. With that, raise good kids, keep doing what you're doing with the raising of the good kids, and be a care bearer. And we're going to get through this. We're going to be okay.
Absolutely. No. And I think, again, the act of just being authentic and being yourself and allowing your kids to be and giving space and fighting for your kids to be who they are is the most radical thing you can do.
All right. Well, so it's not all doom and terror, although it is, but
it's not. It's not, because we can do it together.
Yeah. What I'm taking away is the queer people. We're going to be all right. And we're already doing the good stuff. We're already fighting the good fight. So just keep doing what you're doing, queer folks.
Exactly. And we've done this before, right? And I think that is my thing. And I have this whole book that's coming out in the fall. It's not just that we're going to be okay. We were made for this moment, right? Like, we know what it is like to have things against us. And we know what it's like to lean on community and to fight. And I think we're a really powerful force. And I think if we all work together, I think we are going to be okay. And I think that absolutely queers are going to save democracy.
Boom. Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. We're working on it. Yeah. One queer person at a time, and our kids and our little warriors. The queer agenda right there. So tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find your book, all the things.
My book is A Queer Guide to Saving American Democracy, which is going to be available for pre-order hopefully in the next couple of months. But you can join a mailing list and find my podcast at queerguidetodemocracy.com.
Okay, everybody go check it out, and that'll all be linked in the show notes. And I wish you all the best with your book and everything that you're doing, and stay safe.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge thank you to our sponsors of this here episode, Be Parent Surrogacy. Learn more about them. Find the links to their websites in the show notes. Make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.